officially welcome everyone to Ask Life Coach Mary. This is a call where I am answering your questions about everyday inner peace. I just want to thank all of you for tuning in today, especially so many of you that signed up at the last minute. I saw the flurry of signups here in just the last 24 hours, which is very exciting to me that there are so many people interested in the subject of everyday inner peace, which happens to be my passion. As most of you know, I've been receiving questions, your biggest questions about experiencing everyday inner peace. So I've taken all those and sort of organize them together in different categories, and I'm going to be trying to address as many of your questions about experiencing everyday inner peace as humanly possible in the next 90 minutes or so. Okay, so first off, before we jump into this call, I'd love to just invite everybody into a place of deep inner peace. I don't know what your day was like, if it was crazy, if it was peaceful, if you had a whole lot of things packed in your schedule, or just a few things. It doesn't really matter. What I'd love to invite is everybody just to get present in your own body, in your own being, right here, right now. No multitasking. Just notice where any of your residual energy may have been just moments before the call as we were all tuning in. As I like to use this analogy of pulling all your energy and presence and being right here into present time. And the analogy I like to use is, you know, those retractable leashes where you basically push a button and zip, that line comes all, you know, curled right into the main leash. My hairdryer actually does the same thing, the retractable cord. You push the button, and all the energy that's maybe analyzing what you did in the past, maybe something that happened earlier this week, a confrontation, challenge that's present in your life, that we just let that go, bring all your energy here into present time. Maybe some of that energy is off in the future, wondering how you're going to handle a new challenge that just popped your way, or what you're going to plan for dinner, or what's on your schedule for tomorrow. So just whatever is present, just zip, pull all this energy into present time. Notice your breath. And just get connected with your breath in this moment, fully present and available and open to, number one, be affected by this conversation about everyday inner peace. And secondly, to be open to some new ideas that may radically impact your own sense of inner peace moving forward. Let me jump to one of the very first questions. I have names for some people, and some of them came in through a different stream where they were anonymous. But I thought this was the perfect one to lead off with, and that is, what is inner peace? Now, what does it feel like when you're experiencing it? You know, how do we know that you're there? So first off, hopefully many of you have a sense of what inner peace feels like, because just through a few minutes of present moment awareness, by getting connected in your body, by letting go of any mental thought, and also stepping into a place of all is well. I think that's really the epitome of inner peace, is all is well. One of my very favorite quotes, peace, it does not mean to be in a place where there is no noise, trouble, or hard work. It means to be in the midst of those things and still be calm in your heart. And that author is unknown, but my favorite quote. And when we think of all is well, or when we think of peace, there's another huge big word, and that is alignment. To give us context for the rest of the questions, I'm just real quickly going to go through alignment with four big areas. And you can begin to look, depending on how much inner peace is in your life or lack of, maybe, you know, which one of these areas in particular do you wrestle with the most? Are you not in alignment with the most? So the first one is you. So how much are you in alignment with you? Meaning how much you accept you as you are, you know, whether you're crying or procrastinating or laughing so hard you've got snot coming out of your nose, or whether you're feeling closed-hearted or doing something like this, leading a call. How can you find alignment with whatever is going on with you? Of course, one of the big inner peace tricks, if you will, is really finding peace with all of those parts of yourselves, both the strengths and the weaknesses, finding peace with it all. From Alexander in Jacksonville, after handling the core beliefs, emotions, and perceptions pertaining to blocking my emotions, my heart remains closed by default, and I need to open it up intentionally. Why don't I stay open effortlessly? What to do? So one thing I would say is, and this ties to this being in alignment with yourself, is not making yourself wrong with a closed heart. Loving yourself so much even when your heart is closed. There's a huge big should that says it should be open all the time and I shouldn't have to work at it. And my guess and my knowing is that by putting less intention on forcing it and making yourself wrong for that particular situation, you'll actually find your heart more naturally opening more and more. So you is a huge big area. Another big area that we need to find alignment with is others, accepting them as they are without condition. I know this can be easier said than done. I'm not going to pretend here on the call that, oh yeah, all you have to do is, you know, just think yourself into inner peace. I know it doesn't always work that way. We're going to address more of that as we go throughout the call. But let's just think of this global concept of being in alignment with others. Best example is Byron Katie's CD, Loving What Is. There's an example where she's interacting with a mother who has an 8-year-old, and this 8-year-old wasn't always doing his homework and wasn't living into her fantasy of how an 8-year-old boy should be. She finally came to the conclusion, she's like, oh my gosh, I so get it. What I am saying, when I'm upset at my little boy for being, however he's being in the moment, being rambunctious, not doing his homework, rolling toilet paper down the stairs, whatever it is, I'm basically saying to him, don't be who you are. So we need to take that same idea into relationships and really get that when we really want to live out of a place of inner peace, it really means allowing people to really make their own choices. And sometimes that means they're going to be angry. Sometimes that means we might witness them lying, or we might see them honest, we might see them happy, we might see them sad or depressed. But really loving them and finding them right. And it doesn't mean we have to like their behavior. It doesn't mean we have to tolerate it and put up with it. It just means we allow them to be who they are, however that may show up. So that's another big category is others. Another huge category, and a lot of your questions really relate to this one, and that is reality. We need to align with reality, the reality that is. That means the economy, that means government, the war, weather, stock market, anything that's bigger than us, that's in, let's say, God's control, is reality. And again, we don't have to like it, but once we can look reality square in the eye, then we really have an opportunity to start making some powerful choices. But if we stay caught up in resisting the reality, then we're going to be in this tug of war. All of our energy is going to be consumed in fighting that reality, and we really will remain victims. So let's address this question, kind of relates there. Amanda in Kansas City said, how do I maintain inner peace knowing I'll be laid off from my job in 2 weeks? Inner peace and the job search. Great question. And there's a reality that most people probably wouldn't put that on their wish list. But here's what I would say is, first and foremost, accepting the reality of the situation and the fact that you're already even looking at, well, how could I possibly be at inner peace in a job search, I think is huge. And acknowledge yourself right now for even holding that as a possibility, because we all know people that get laid off, they hang in resistance, they sit on the couch, they stay depressed, and they take no action that will remedy their situation. In fact, they spiral downward. Instead, if we first accept and recognize the reality of the situation, I would next say, focus on your strengths. Focus on your gifts. And how can you highlight that in a resume if that's your path? How can you open yourself up to all possibilities? And go and brainstorm, what really are all the options? The biggest thing I see with people when it comes to layoff situations is getting trapped into things needing to turn out a certain way. You know, I will only accept this kind of job in this kind of place. One of the participants in one of my boot camps was, his whole background had been in finances, managed money and the stock market and so forth. The truth is he hated it. He absolutely hated it. And yet, because that was where his experience was, he kind of kept going on to different interviews. He would get job offers, but in the end, it wasn't really feeling good, so he wasn't accepting that. But then we started looking at not only what his strengths were, but what are his passions, and opening him up to possibilities. Funny thing is, he happened across acknowledging that he loves driving. He's a guy. He was doing some deliveries for somebody as a part-time. He's like, you know, I really love driving. And next thing you know, he ended up landing a job as a test driver for some service that all the car dealerships hire to test cars. Because he was open, instead of forcing himself down a path that clearly wasn't his destiny and path, opened himself up to the possibilities. He is so passionate about the job. Because he's so passionate, last I heard, he'd gotten at least one or two promotions, and they took him from contract to more of a full-time employee, and so he's working his way up. He's totally on path. Here's just another note around job type situations, especially when they surprise us, is to look at what is the universe telling you. Any kind of abrupt shift is really just a nudge along your path. If all of a sudden you're suddenly laid off, maybe we can be thanking the universe that this wasn't the job that you were most passionate about and were loving. And even if you were loving the job, maybe your next path is something that will bring you together with a significant someone or will open up some newer possibilities. So one thing that is very helpful in everyday inner peace is having a set of inner peace mantras or inner peace beliefs, things that you come back to again and again as sort of guiding posts. And one of those is the universe is a friendly place. That the universe is nudging you, guiding you in a way to serve your highest good. Another one of those mantras, since I'm on there, is the mantra, all is well. And to really get, regardless of the challenging times, another question is, how can we feel peaceful even in challenging times? To really get that it isn't about the times that makes us peaceful. If you notice yourself, even throughout the craziest, most stressful times, you can find peace in the oddest moments. You can find peace in watching a sunset, being still at the end of the day, being engaged in a funny TV show or movie, to really get that the times is just part of reality. That's going on. How we want to choose to dance in this world with our own choices is really what's going to set us up. Okay, and I'm going to come back here. So I said that there's four kind of key things that we need to align with. One is aligning with you. Second one is aligning with others. Third is aligning with reality. And fourth is aligning with your dreams. And when I think of dreams, we can either accept, embrace, and live into them, or we can resist them. And we can resist our dreams in two ways. We can resist them by wanting to artificially speed things up. And I know you know what I'm talking about here. It's where we think that all 30 things on our to-do list should be done now, or in many cases, the 200 things on your to-do list, we're artificially wanting to speed things up. Oh, I should have already gotten that done, and this 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 done. It's like, hold on, slow down. Let's come back to real time here and really get that things are unfolding perfectly. Again, this is a dance between reality and dreams that we get 24 hours in a day. If you made a list, like I did, I actually did this a couple weeks ago. I was feeling some pressure of, gosh, all these things to get done. And I walked myself through a process I'm going to share with you. But one of the things that I did is I made a list of all my shoulds, my should list. My should list was all the things that I really wanted to have done by Monday, and I was doing this on like a Friday morning. I took my list, and next to each item, I wrote a little number of how long I thought it would take to complete that project. By the time I got done, I was literally laughing out loud at myself, going, okay, being completely unrealistic here. Artificially trying to speed things up is just a recipe for stress and overwhelm and frustration. Doesn't feel good. You guys know what that is. So stop it. Stop it. Stop it. And I'm going to give you some tools about really kind of breaking that process down as well. So one thing we can do is artificially try and speed things up. Just notice when you do that. The other thing we can do is artificially slow things down. This turns up in the form of procrastination. This sometimes fear shows up, indecision, lack of clarity, avoiding the biggest, most important thing on your list. So we can also artificially try and slow things down. And I'll tell you, I'm guilty of this one as much as anyone. For a while now, actually, I've really felt that one of my callings was really to talk more specifically about everyday inner peace. It actually, honestly, could scare the gajibis out of me to just focus on one topic. I've been a life coach for 10-plus years and found a lot of pleasure in coaching on just a variety of topics, kind of staying a generalist, which I've learned recently has kept me feeling somewhat a delusion of safe. And as opposed to taking what I'm really most passionate about and really putting myself out there. So I know what it feels like to put the brakes on, and I also know that there is such a level of joy and freedom that comes from really honoring whatever your dream, your passion, your purpose is. This isn't to beat up on you if you are artificially trying to slow things down or artificially trying to speed things up. It's really mostly about just beginning to notice, and then as you'll see, if we're really bringing ourselves back to just a place of accepting reality for what it is, pulling all of our energy into present time, we connect into that place of power, which really allows us to choose and to say, wow, is this really important? Do I really want to step into my vision about helping more people create a greater sense of everyday inner peace in their lives? Then, okay, well, what's the very next one thing I need to do? The good news is you don't have to figure out the next 100 steps. Really just the next one is okay. Better yet, if you can come up with the next 5 or 10. But really, honestly, you don't need to have it all mapped out, because if we're really living out of the present moment, you will be guided at every step about what to do next. I'm going to make one extra note on aligning with you, and that is part of you is aligning with your own spirit, your own inner guidance. We can either fight that and try and micromanage everything, or trust that as you step into and take the next step, that the next step will reveal itself. We have several questions that related to overwhelm. Now, what are some practical steps to feeling peaceful when you feel overwhelmed? Boy, I'm right there with you. Practical steps. So here's the first thing. Some of you may be familiar with a 6-question process known as the Inner Peace Reality Check. If you are not, doesn't matter, I'm going to go through these six questions here real quickly. I will also, since you're all registered for the call, I will email out this form with the questions afterwards. So you can take notes on this and know that you'll also get this back. But particularly in a case of overwhelm, let's come back. The first step is really doing the reality check. First question, what's the reality of the situation? Reality of the situation is naming facts. It's naming feelings sometimes. And particularly for things like overwhelm, it's just simply naming everything either on your should list. It's about acknowledging the feelings that are present for you. Are you being unrealistic? Are you saying yes too often? Part of what's the reality of the situation is acknowledging how much time you have to implement some of the things that you'd like to implement. So step one is, what's the reality of the situation? This is where I made my should list, where I laughed out loud afterwards and got a little perspective. As much as I wish we could stretch time, it's reality is reality. We get 24 hours each day. Whatever expectations we have about it unfolding don't always line up. It's just part of our acceptance. If we continue to fight and we pretend we can fit all 50 things on our to-do list in our calendar, if we really map it out and look at what's realistic, if you're doing this to yourself every single day, this is a self-torturing habit. It's very, very simple to stop. Basically, you're going to get done what you're going to get done. All we want to do is alleviate the pressure, the stress that goes along with having leftover, excess of leftover things on your to-do list. Let's just get you living more in real time. How good does it feel to accomplish everything on your list? Let's break it down and set yourself up to win. Second question, what am I resisting? In the case of overwhelm, we might look here, what am I resisting? Am I resisting making decisions? Or am I resisting the limited time or the quantity on my list? Am I resisting a sense of discipline to execute? Am I resisting the feelings of overwhelm? Am I resisting something in the past, how I may have spent my time in the past? Am I resisting learning a new technology? I don't know about you, but I've learned so many technologies in the last year. Sometimes I thought my head would burst. And when there's one more that gets faced on my plate that, you need to learn this, it's like, But here's the thing. We can either resist learning the new technology or we can embrace it, have somebody walk through a couple steps. Anytime we resist, it's a waste of energy. We're just consumed into it. So first, by just even recognizing it and acknowledging it with this number two question, we can just begin to pull ourselves more into a place of awareness. So be gentle with yourself there. And by the way, for each of these questions, I highly recommend that you actually write down your answers. So that's the second question. What are you resisting? Third question, what if I continue resisting? If you continue resisting, let's just try that one on. If you're in a place of overwhelm or frustration or stress or pressure or anxiety, if we continue resisting what's going on in your situation, just start thinking and taking inventory, as unpleasant as it is, about what the impact is, what it's doing to your cells. Literally, stress and pressure changes the DNA of our cells. It makes it weaker, more susceptible to disease. If you look at every major disease that's out there, stress is one of the exasperators and sometimes often the cause of some of these diseases. We will very quickly age ourselves. Take a look at anybody that's been in the White House. It's not just 4 years or 8 years of natural aging. It's 4 years and 8 years of natural aging plus exasperated stress and pressure. And I know you've seen this in maybe a family member or a friend that's got a business, just crazy workaholic, and what kind of impact that can have. And then look at what's the impact on your relationships. What's the impact on your level of fulfillment, your joy, your productivity? Hanging in resistance, it's great to recognize when we're there, but we want to just get present, even though it's uncomfortable, to what the cost is. unfortunately, then we move to question four, which is actually a feel-good question. What can I appreciate? What can I appreciate about the situation? What can I appreciate about the overwhelm, for example, or about losing a job? Or what can I appreciate about my monkey mind? It's another one of the questions that came up. What can I appreciate? Well, in the case of overwhelm, we might say, well, you know, I've got lots of choices. We might say, I'm in demand. You might appreciate if it's a technology you need to learn, we can appreciate all of the technologies you've already learned. But with every situation, getting laid off, what can you appreciate? What could be the gift, the opportunity, or benefit? I might find something I love even more, maybe even more fulfilling, that's a higher expression of who I am. So that's question four. What can I appreciate? Number five, what are my options? Here's where we always want to get that doing nothing is always an option. So, you know, just list that one out first and foremost. I could just keep resisting. That's one option. What else? And I invite you to be creative here. I invite you to explore, to be open to possibilities, like my client who ended up driving cars professionally and just loves it, loves it, loves it. It can show up lots and lots of different ways. What are my options? And then fifth question, very simple, is what will I consciously choose? We all know that it's not just enough to have 10 fabulous or 20 fabulous or even 30 fabulous options. If we don't consciously choose and take action, then chances are we're going to, you know, stay swimming in some level of resistance. So what will I consciously choose? Pick a path. It's not permanent. Doesn't mean end of the road. You can always choose again if need be. Sixth question, what will I consciously choose? So I'll just run through this real quickly. First question, what's the reality of the situation? Number two, what am I resisting? Number three, what if I continue resisting? Number four, what can I appreciate about the situation? Number five, what are my options? And number six, what will I consciously choose? And I will tell you, the biggest thing when I'm in a place of overwhelm, that's what I do. I pull out this set of questions. I write down what's the reality of my situation. Sometimes part of the overwhelm has to do with I've not gotten some exercise or maybe less sleep, so my self-care has been compromised. Maybe I skipped lunch that day. So those are also part of the reality check and to tune in. Here's another question that relates to overwhelm. And that is how to get off the treadmill of feeling tension about all the things I want to do and not enough time to do them in. And here my suggestion is you're looking at too small of a time frame. And I might ask you, I mean, what's the time that you're giving yourself to accomplish everything in? Is it like me where I was giving myself 4 days to get a completely unreasonable amount of projects done, or is it the course of a month? Once we start blowing up our horizon, maybe we need to blow it up into a month. Maybe I needed to spread it out over 2 months. But you can just keep pulling it up to a bigger and bigger level until you can see where things can comfortably fit in your schedule. That's how I would address that question. And also, as it relates to all the things you want to do, I hear a thought in there. We want to be always on the look for when there's angst, stress, frustration, inner turmoil, we want to be looking for what's the thought, what's the belief that I have about this situation. So in this case, I'm going to make this up since we have the lines closed right now and I'm not sure if this person's even on the line. How do we get off the treadmill of feeling tension about all the things I want to do and not enough time to do them in? Well, what's your belief about it has to get done by when? There's a belief there about maybe even a should that it's all supposed to get done within in a certain time frame. That would be very stressful if that does not match up with reality, of course. So we want to be on the lookout for the thought or belief that could be showing up here. Let's take another question here. This is Christy from Fort Lauderdale. How do we prioritize our life when everything seems to fall into the have to category? I know that we have to take care of ourselves or the rest of it suffers, but we also have to work, pay bills, maintain family relationships, do the grocery shopping, shower, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes it's hard to juggle. So first off, couple things here. Really important to notice our language. A language of have to. And my coach actually was calling me on this a few weeks back as well. And everything's, I need to get this done. I should do this. And I think my big word was need to in that case. But the need to was almost like this desperation that if I didn't get it done, that something horrible was going to happen. And that language can trigger certain emotional states with us. So instead, we might look at what different language, what could we do instead of a have to category? Maybe it's a could do or would like to do. You know, I'd like to take care of myself. I would like to be able to pay my bills and maintain family relationships. Then I would look, and it's like, what are the beliefs here? And I don't know specifically for this person, but you know, what are your beliefs, or we could call it, what are your rules for what it takes, let's say, to maintain family relationship, or you know, how difficult or hard it is to pay the bills, or how difficult it may be to take care of yourself. We could turn that around and look at how could it be easy to take care of yourself every single day and pay the bills, maintain relationships, get the grocery shopping done. What I often see happening is we'll have something, you know, it's like, oh, you know, grocery shopping and you know, needing to get this done or have to get this done. And it's nice when you can create a system and it happens on a nice regular basis. I'll use the example of laundry. Generally, I do my laundry usually either on Saturday or Sunday. And ideally, I like to do it on Sunday because then everything is clean and ready to go first thing Monday morning. I notice sometimes that if my little schedule gets disrupted, I would notice a little angst pop up, putting a damper in the inner peace. It's only the attachment that it has to get done then. The reality is I can survive without laundry being done the entire weekend, and it's amazing how long we can go, and I can do laundry during the week, and it's like, what's the reality of the situation? Basically, I'm looking at 2, maybe 3 loads a week to take care of my husband and I, and if you count really how much time it takes, the story in my head is going to be far more painful than the actual execution of it. And that is often the case with the different things we put on our have-to, need-to, should list. One other final comment around this question is, in general, of looking where we can let go of the should. I should do all of these things in a certain and particular way. We want to dance between what we would like to do and what we are choosing to do. So if we stay mindful of what we want to do and we keep coming back to a powerful place of choice, I will say the powerful place of choice is the place of inner peace, we will blow our minds about what we can potentially accomplish, what we will accomplish. And we can keep choosing out of the moment. You know what? I'm going to do grocery shopping right now. I'm going to take time for me. So we want to keep looking at this letting go of the shoulds. So hopefully that answered and addressed that question. Since we're talking a little bit about letting go of the should, there's some other questions that related here. Helen from Australia. I have no idea what time it is there, but probably not a normal hour. So her question is, when doing a meditation, I do not visualize anything. When the presenter says, now visualize or imagine yourself doing blankety blank, I'm left there cold. I've just tried to just imagine. What if I could imagine? It does not work. I've written or asked for help, but no one's been able to answer this question. I'm sure there must be other people who have the same situation. Yes. One needs this visualization to be able to get anything out of any of your collective programs. So first off, obviously here's a great example of huge should. I should be able to visualize. And actually, I would say if you have a harder time visualizing, and especially in meditation, I would say yay for you. This is very good news. I mean, we want to have more of a blank mind. Let's not try and create more in that beautiful mind of yours than needs to be. Here is the question of the closed heart. It should be open all the time. What's the reality of the situation? It's either open, it's not open. It's open, it's not open. And fighting it is very counterproductive. It actually sabotages the efforts of getting the result that you want. I would say in that particular question, let go of the idea that you need to visualize. You don't have to at all. There's a lot of other ways. If in your case, first off, meditation, the whole point is to drop thought and to let go of the mind. If what you're wanting is to manifest something, to visualize, there's lots of other tools for that. There's treasure mapping, cutting out images and putting those on a board, or journaling, scripting out, writing from 1 year from today, saying it is February 25th, 2010, and I'm amazed at how magnificent my life is. And you write from the present tense, I have the most fulfilling relationship, I achieved the goals that I set over the last year, I wrote a book, I was able to finally do the splits in yoga, you know, whatever it is for you, there's lots of other ways to visualize. So let that one go. Good example of letting go of the should. Here's another question from Margot in Pennsylvania. And her question here is, how do I deal with difficult elder care issues and keep my sanity? And so my question here is, what is your should? What's the should about how it's supposed to be when you care for elders? Is it they shouldn't talk back to you? They should be easy? Yeah, we just want to look at what's the part, what's the belief that's making it difficult, and for us to dive into that and go back to the point I was saying about aligning with the reality of others, the elders, loving them for who they are, in their crankiness, in their moodiness. This question brought up a moment when I was with my husband's father. We were with him for about a month before he passed away, right after our honeymoon. There were so many situations. He'd had a stroke where he actually lost the connection in his brain that allowed him to empathize. So that part that allows us to be touchy-feely type people, his was completely blown out with the stroke. And he was very, you could say, difficult to be with. And yet, if we don't have a should about how he should be, should interact, should treat us, he should desire this, he should want to spend more time and be in open conversation. You know, he was where he was, and the best way we could love and honor him was just to be present if he was okay with us even just being in the room with him and not saying a word. But I would investigate on this question, you know, what's the should, and what kind of story do you have here about the situation, to investigate those thoughts. Another great question, inner peace. This is sort of related to inner peace practices. The question here is, how do you choose inner peace every day? How do you maintain it? Great question. I will tell you, first thing here, what not to do. Don't try and maintain peace every single day, 24/7. It is a recipe for pressure, stress, the whole nine yards. Not good. In fact, I can tell you, being somebody who took on the idea of being an inner peace coach, I had that belief for a little while that I'm supposed to be at inner peace 24/7. My husband actually shared that same belief. So when I had a situation popped up and my emotions got triggered for whatever reason, it was triple worse because in addition to whatever was setting me off emotionally, learning about a health situation or finding out some news about my husband, I had a situation where a business partner embezzled about $60,000. Whatever was exasperating my inner peace was made worse by thinking that I should be at inner peace. Because why? Reality was, I was emotionally hooked. Whether it was I hadn't taken care of myself, so I'd gotten a little irritable, got some bad news back on a health test, oh, got to go back for a second breast exam after a mammogram, something like that. So first and foremost, if we're wanting to expand inner peace in your life, don't go after it. Inner peace is one of those things that you can't chase it so much. It's much more about allowing it to be in your life. And there are some definite things we can do, but chasing it, number one, is something not to do, just in case you try that at home. So give yourself permission to be a human being, these days when emotion does pop up. Recently, most of you know that my 15-and-a-half-year-old golden retriever Rugby had to be put down a couple weeks ago. He actually has been living with a family for a while, so it was very sudden news to me. And even though he wasn't living with me, you know, I took the news initially, but then within 30 minutes, it's like I could barely talk about it, and a lot of tears. But I know now that when the emotions come, this isn't the time to try and stuff it. It's not the time to resist those emotions. It's about embracing whatever feelings are showing up in the moment. It's about loving yourself in the grief, loving yourself in the sadness, loving yourself. And I saw that as a question that popped up right before we started about, you know, how do you do inner peace when someone around you is angry? Well, let's just take when you're angry, first of all. When you're angry, same thing. It's what is it to give yourself full permission to express that human emotion, feel that feeling. I used to, even on the anger, feel that frustration. Like, okay, we're supposed to feel into the feeling. I'm like, okay, grrr. Like, okay, you can be as angry as long as you want. Surprisingly, when we feel into whatever human emotion has us by the tail, the more we don't resist it, the quicker we will move through it. You can experiment with that at home. Whether it's about tears of grief, giving yourself that full permission, take as long as you need. What helps with that is to imagine, and whoever's the visualization person, when I say imagine, I don't actually say imagine where I see a spirit-type human being over me, but I do imagine the presence, the energy of people loving me. I take all of the experiences in my life, whether it may be my parents, people I've been in relationships with, friends, siblings, mentors, anyone that has expressed love and support to me. I take it as little love packets coming from each of them. So very important when we're in those moments is to love yourself wherever you are. So other things that we can do as it relates to, you know, how we can choose inner peace every day. Here's the other question. How can I get to a place where I'm experiencing it more consistently? So I'm a huge fan and huge advocate of taking on inner peace practices. Inner peace practices is a little bit of time each day where you consciously practice being in inner peace. And this isn't, you know, one whole big activity set aside. You could make it that way, but it could be as simple as when you're in the shower to just really ground yourself in a place of inner peace. It might be while you're going for a walk. It could be time when you're journaling, or for some people when they read or listen to something inspiring, that helps them find that place of inner peace within themselves. Lots of different practices, and of course meditation, granddaddy of the inner peace practices, is another really, really great one. Because the more often we practice coming back to a place of peace, we build up that inner peace muscle. When something pops up, even getting news of my dog, and here it is 11 o'clock in the morning, and basically they're going to be putting the dog down at 5 o'clock that afternoon, that in the moment I can embrace a sense of peace because I have this belief, you know, I can handle anything. Another very powerful inner peace mantra. But want to work those inner peace muscles physically, that's about self-care. Another great inner peace practice relates to your breath. When we are breathing at kind of the deepest, most peacefully, maybe as you are breathing now, this is our breath that is our biggest pathway and gateway to peace. And I'm very excited. Actually, Jim Ross, who was here listening in the call, reminded me that there is a tool. I haven't gotten mine yet, but I read everything about it, and I highly endorse this even before knowing about it. There's a product through HeartMath known as the M-Wave. It's E-M-W-A-V-E, and it's a a little device smaller than like an iPhone or an iPod, and it's a little feedback machine where you basically put your thumb finger in it, and it actually reads the electrical currency going on in your heart and your breathing, and it's a feedback machine. So you can see first off, okay, red zone, this looks very stressful. And then I believe there's a blue zone, and then the best is green, which would be somebody living everyday inner peace. And the biggest exercise is about using your breath to just consciously come back to a greater place of inner peace. Excited about that. And thank you, Jim Ross, for recommending that. Always looking for great inner peace tools. So breathing, great inner peace practice. Two other ones, well, I mentioned three other great inner peace practices. One is, if I say breath is one of the big granddaddies of inner peace, the other huge big one is resting in awareness. I believe most people listening to this will know what I mean. Awareness simply meaning identifying with that part of yourself that is witnessing your life unfolding. There's a part of me right now that is speaking, and there's a part of myself that is also observing me speaking, that is also noticing how much tension's in my body, how relaxed I am. That part of me that notices if my voice shifts to a less pleasing voice, if I'm annoyed by something my husband did, which I have a perfect husband, so that never happens. I'm saying that just for him, because he's probably listening in, but actually, occasionally I do get irritated with him. I am a human being over here, and most of the time it actually has nothing to do with him. It has more to do with some attachment that I had or a set of emotions I wasn't ready for, but we can notice that part of ourselves that goes into a place of reaction, and it's that place of awareness. If we're really connected into that place of awareness, and the more closely we are, we can actually connect with the power to stop in any moment. One of the gals that I adore, who is from working with an inner peace mastermind right now, a small group of some graduates of my Success in Inner Peace boot camps, and she was sharing how noticing herself getting caught up in some angst or anxiety about something, kind of running an old pattern that she'd run before. And by being in a place of awareness, she was actually able to finally, like, she noticed herself doing it for a while and then stopped herself and said, you know what? You know, kind of like onto myself. You know, I'm gonna stop that right now. And I'm going to choose something different. When you catch yourself in those moments, you might physically shake your body out to kind of change the energy. You might go drink some water. That can help. You might go do something physical just to really shift the energy. Might be a good time to pull out a sheet of paper and take yourself through the 6 questions on the Inner Peace Reality Check. It could be an opportunity to pull out a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. Many of you are familiar with Byron Katie's process of inquiry. That could be another great exercise to do at that time. You might just laugh at yourself out loud, or if you're in a conversation with a sweetheart, you might just say to yourself, you know what, let's do a do-over. Can we start again? So lots of options, but the biggest thing is by hanging in this place of awareness, this witness place, and connecting with that part of ourselves, be surprised just how much power you have in those moments. Well, and since we're talking inner peace practices, one of the questions was around, how do you fit it all in your day? Sort of the challenge. And I'll say this, the things that we really make musts in our life, and that's M-U-S-T, the musts in our life just happen. I bet the vast majority of people on this line make brushing your teeth a must. It's something you do sometime in the morning and sometime at night, and for some people maybe more often than that. It's just a must. Like, there's something that's just triggered in you that this is something that creates a long-term result in your life. And unfortunately, like, you know, brushing your teeth, it's not just a one-time thing. You don't just do it once and then, gosh, I'll do that next month, unless you like to visit your dentist and you like to have your teeth drilled. Inner peace practices are the same thing, that same feeling that triggers brushing of the teeth can be the same trigger that says, you know, I'm ready for an inner peace timeout. Like, that's what I want to honor right now. And maybe you go lay on your bed or take 15 minutes to read an inspiring passage or go for a walk in nature, another fabulous inner peace practice. Another question here was, when is the best time for women entrepreneurs with family and commitments? Another phenomenal question. What I can say here is we got to look and create the time and the space. One of my clients is a physician. She and her husband were both doctors in a practice, so she was with her husband all day working, and she had, I think at the time, a seven-year-old. She would make that transition home, and it was like, okay, I'm going from work and then right into full-time mom, and, you know, that wasn't working for her inner peace quotient. So what we implemented was sort of an inner peace timeout for her. When she came home, before she engaged with her daughter, she went up to her room, and she took some kind of time for herself. Sometimes she meditated, sometimes she took a little nap, sometimes she read, sometimes she just laid on her bed and just rested to just kind of bring and collect all of her energy back into her body. And that way, when she stepped into being a mom, she was fully available and ready. Like, we've got to create and take that time. Got another client in his situation. Sometimes what he would do is stop by the park on his drive home, even if it was for 5 to 10 to 15 minutes, and just sort of stop and just sort of breathe, take, again, an inner peace time out, maybe get connected to the breath, just let go of anything from the day, but just kind of rest in his own energy. So there's another example. You can do it on drive time home. One place I take my little inner peace timeout, I very often, since I work from home, will shower at the end of my day instead of the beginning of my day, and that shower becomes a really great inner peace timeout, a chance to get really present with the water, feel the sensations, the smells, connect to a place of inner peace. So my shower now has become one of my little inner peace havens. And then that ritual of just putting lotion on, kind of getting ready for the evening, which quite honestly includes throwing on my pajama bottoms and a little tank top, just getting ready to go downstairs to engage now with my husband. That's my little inner peace timeout. And my bet is that if you really want to make it a must, that you can find, we're really only talking about 15 minutes, 5 to 15 minutes to begin to build that, and that time can grow. And here's another question. What books do I need to read? Seminars, workshops, do I need to attend? People do I need to meet to better learn and relearn how to shut off my head? So this kind of relates to inner peace practices, and then we'll talk a little bit more about monkey mind, but some of my favorite authors, I'll say the very first one is Byron Katie. Single best, especially if the question is about dealing with excessive thoughts. I don't know anyone else out there that has a process as powerful as Byron Katie. So her work, Loving What Is, I'm currently listening to I Need Your Love, Is It True? That's fantastic. Her book, A Thousand Names for Joy. Anything that's Byron Katie, read it, reread it, listen, re-listen, go to her school, her work. Love, love, love her work. Eckhart Tolle's also had a huge, big impact on me. Got a ton of audio programs, Power of Now, A New Earth. Dr. David Hawkins, who's also written multiple books. He wrote Power versus Force. I really loved Eye of the Eye, and I'm a little behind in some of his later books, but very good ones also. And I also recommend my own book, The Power of Inner Choice. If you don't have a copy of that, a fabulous resource because it really ties together key ideas from so many of these other masters. So those are some recommendations there. So talking a little bit about shutting off your head and monkey minds, here's a great one. We'll take just this first question. You know, how can I learn to better shut off my head? And so before we get into some strategies about what you can do to shift your focus and what to do when the mind really goes crazy, I've been there right with you. I do want to share a very important story. Many of you have seen the movie A Beautiful Mind. When I attended the school for the work, Byron Katie's 10-day retreat, there was a particular relationship in my life that, I mean, I've always been one to have a lot of thought in my head, and usually it was about guys, some guy that I was into, or even if they didn't exist, even in high school. I've been doing this my entire life. In high school even, my mind was always preoccupied with some guy. Well, at the time I went to the school, there was a particular man in my life, and it was like on loudspeakers 24/7. There was sort of this almost obsession, I will say, about all these thoughts, about wanting him to call more and to reciprocate in a different way than he was, and you know, so many shoulds that I had tied up. But the biggest thing is the thoughts kept coming and coming and coming and coming. And I was at the school, and this is into it, several days, and still I'm finding, oh my gosh, the thoughts keep coming, and am I ever going to get these thoughts to go away? It's like, already. It's like, can I, this guy just be out of my life? Can I just please stop thinking of this person? And the flash came of the movie, A Beautiful Mind, and you know in the movie that the main character that Russell Crowe plays has these imaginary friends. Those imaginary friends keep showing up all throughout the movie. He originally believed those people, which we might think of as a metaphor for thought, they kept showing up in his life. Initially, he engaged them. He thought they were real. He did all kinds of things based on the belief that they were real. Maybe remember one scene where he leaves his like 1-year-old or 2-year-old daughter in the bathtub by herself because his imaginary friend was watching her. Now, that's one of the examples. So as he comes to get that these imaginary friends are imaginary, he tried like crazy to avoid them. And you know what? Here's the reality is they kept showing up. They kept showing up. They kept showing up. And in my mind, I started thinking, I'm like, well, what if my thoughts are like Russell Crowe's or that character's imaginary friends? That what if they just show up, but as at the end of the movie, instead of engaging them, he just simply noticed them but didn't give them any energy or attention. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm going to just have to live with these thoughts floating through my head for forever. And here's what's interesting. Over time, I think it was maybe about a year later, I finally that relationship naturally ended. It was actually about another 6 months later I met my husband. And I can say it's kind of funny because I'm having a hard time even thinking what were the predominant thoughts I was having back then. Oh, now I'm remembering. Now they're coming up again. You know what? They're not present and pervasive. If I want, I can go and find them, and I can dwell on them, and I can find the icky emotions that go along with them. But you know, trying to get rid of all of the thoughts in our heads, you know, that's another, anything we push against, not a good strategy. So those thoughts that are coming in, we want to make friends with them. So coming back to monkey mind, it's like, what can we do when monkey mind shows up? Why does monkey mind appear to pervade one's mind? First off, I don't know. It's reality. It's the way it is. I'll see if I can find a more scientific answer for that at some point. So a couple recommendations. First off, this is an excellent application for Byron Katie's process of inquiry. Pull pull off a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. If you're not familiar with Byron Katie, you can go to lovingwhatis.com, and somewhere there you'll see a tab that says Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. Click on that. There's a PDF you can download. Simply answer those questions, and then you'll apply. She has four questions to apply that will, where you get to evaluate, inquire, investigate each one of the thoughts that is running havoc in your mind. Also, in my book, The Power of Inner Choice, there's two chapters that are 100% dedicated to the process of inquiry. So you don't even need Byron Katie's book, or I highly recommend them, but if you wanted to just get my book or even just download my ebook or purchase the book, you will find in lessons number 8 and 9 some great chapters on embracing reality and releasing stressful thoughts. So inquiry is fantastic. Number 2, I shared earlier the inner peace reality check. And because you're listening to the CD, you will also have a copy of that worksheet, so you can just simply walk yourself through those questions. Also, another big thing that you can do is, and when we're caught in a pattern, and that is even a pattern of thought, physical movement is one of the best ways to change our physical state. So physical movement could mean doing some jumping jacks, could be going for a walk, could be doing some yoga stretches. And I will tell you that the night before my wedding, I had monkey mind like nobody's business. And here I am. I'm doing inquiry in my mind. My maid of honor was actually in the bed sleeping next to me, and I didn't want to wake her up, so I actually was trying to do inquiry in my head. That wasn't working. I was trying to focus on something that I wanted, but, you know, alas, the mind wasn't working. And I'll tell you what finally did work, and that is I got up out of bed, and I went and I did some yoga stretches. What a lot of people don't know, when you do any kind of yoga stretch that is a deep forward bend, that means if you're sitting on the floor with your legs out straight and you lean over to touch your toes, as close as you can touch them, doesn't mean you have to do it perfectly, you are bending the back of that spine, and those deep forward bends are really great at just relaxing the body. Plus, the yoga stretches themselves will get you into your body and less focused on whatever's going on in your mind. Physical movement is a great distractor, and deep forward bends, particularly two other ones, there's rabbit and half tortoise. If you don't know what those yoga postures are, I suggest you Google it online and you'll be able to see a picture of what it looks like, or you can ask any yoga instructor, particularly at a Bikram studio. Those are two Bikram postures, but most yoga teachers know those two, rabbit and half tortoise. And even just leaning over, touching your toes, but it was those stretches that actually finally got my body to relax and got me out of monkey mind so I could get like 3 hours of sleep before my wedding. Tip, start doing those exercises earlier if you're getting married the next day and having trouble sleeping. Here's another question from Call in New York. What are your favorite suggestions for staying in peace when counterproductive thoughts pop up? So, you know, a real simple one, kind of an early on, is just to redirect the focus. If your mind is focusing on one thing, shake your body out and sit down and get clear on what you do want to create. What do you want? What do you want in this moment? And if the mind is going more crazy, again, inquiry, inner peace, reality check, those are the big ones there. Here's another question from Karen in Anchorage. How do you keep your inner peace when you want to make life-changing decisions and the what-if questions start up? So first off, I'm hearing the what-if questions are probably not positive ones, like the what-if on the downside, you know, what if this doesn't work out type things. I suggest what I call what-if upping. That means asking, what if And in fact, I asked this question right before the call. What if leading this call was really easy? What if everything just flowed 100% and I had a blast? So we can ask the what if, but ask it on the positive. So what if this decision that you're making turns out to be the best decision you ever could have made? And here's another great one. I'm going to borrow this from Jane. What if what is doesn't need to change? Another great question. What if I'm surprised and receive a surprise check in the mail? So you can play around with that. It's actually fun to do with a partner because sometimes other people can come up with even more fun what ifs than you can. Okay, one other one I want to address. How do I entirely detach myself from everyone else's opinions and build a strong psychological independent character? So for this, I want you to, if you've got a sheet of paper, draw a circle. And inside the circle, make this a semi-big circle. Inside the circle, I want you to write reality. And you can include you in reality because you are part of reality. Outside, I want you to make several dots. Make them, you know, not necessarily right next to the circle, but make them outside. Reality is here. And while we may come and go, reality will continue to operate long after even we're gone. Those little dots outside are the good opinions, actually, of you and the good opinions of others. They are not reality. They are just made-up thoughts and stories. Reality actually doesn't care about what those opinions are. That sounds sort of harsh, but it's the truth. We can think that it shouldn't be raining in Seattle, but if it's raining in Seattle, opinion doesn't really count for much. Or who should be president or who shouldn't be president. These are just opinions. Reality plays out as it is. They're all simply opinions. And when we can really get that we are not other people's opinions and really connect to the reality of who we are and what we believe about ourselves and the strengths and our gifts, then that is where we have a place of peace and power. One other quick one here on finances. How can I feel peaceful when my finances are looking bleak? First off, finances really has nothing to do with inner peace. I know that in a human being body that we can get preoccupied by finances, but I'm willing to bet that there are times, even if your finances are bleak, that there are moments that you have of peace. So you've got to really get that we might not like our financial situation, but they're two independent, separate things. When our finances are looking bleak, the best thing that we can do is find ourselves in a place of peace, because this is where we are in the greater place of power and choice. This is where we will be able to make good decisions about what our next opportunities are and be open to those. So sort of a fast answer. But I wanted to squeeze a couple of these in. And this one is how to be successful at having inner peace without crossing the line into apathy. And first I have to get that apathy is really about not feeling anything. Pathy means emotion. The A is not feeling emotion. So apathy is not emotion. And when we're really at peace, there's actually a very sweet emotion that is there. So to really draw the distinction, inner peace does not equal apathy. It also doesn't equal laziness. Inner peace, in my book, equals power. It represents purpose because this is where we get to live out of our purpose. And peace also represents pleasure, lots of good peace. So it's from this peaceful place that we access power to create, to tap into our authenticity, to be guided and directed in our life. Anything that's interfering with that is just siphoning off energy that we can use to channel to direct our focus. Okay, so I have gone on and on. I tried to integrate as many questions as I possibly could. I may need to do another call like this in the future. I'm going to just open the lines here real quick. I've got the lines open right now, and maybe just is there a question or any thoughts or comments about what we talked about here?
Hi, Mary. It's Sasha.
Hi, Sasha. How are you?
Good. Thank you for this call. It's magnificent. I do have a quick question, and that is one of my challenges for inner peace has been my ongoing health path. And using your terminology, the should brigade has been alive and well in my life for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would love to hear any additional thoughts that you could offer about embracing my health challenges that would give me greater inner peace and greater recognition of how much it is still so much a part of my soul life purpose.
Okay, definitely. First off, you know, when physical challenges, and I have the utmost empathy for those people that are gifted with physical challenges. I've just started a new client that has been dealing with this entire life as well. And when it pops up, the first thing I say is just don't fight it. It's like you've got to honor. Muscling through is not the answer for you. It's honoring yourself. It's setting yourself up with practices so that you don't slip into the real painful mode with the health challenges. So you've got to make that a priority. But then to look at, ask powerful questions. So what actions can I take right now? Depending on where you are in a physical challenge state, maybe the very best thing is for you to just devote 100% of your energy to rest, to meditate. Maybe this is a good time to read something really inspiring that would also benefit your business. But to go within and not muscle through. In other cases, maybe it's less severe. Maybe it's just a moderate annoyance or something. Go within. You know, what can I do right now? What one step can I take right now that would further my business? So does that help?
Yes, definitely. It's what I'm already doing, and your whole call was just a wonderful confirmation that I'm moving right along.
Yeah. Not making it more that, oh, I'm supposed to move faster, You know, I don't know why you get to move at the pace that you're moving, but you want to be smart and make the best choices that you can under your circumstances, but quit making yourself wrong for having to take some inner peace timeouts.
Right. Thank you, Mary, and thank you so much for the examples of your own life. They were very affirming for me.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Any other last-minute questions or comments?
Mary, this is Marion. I have a quick one that I kind of posted a little bit late. There's a lot of spiritual work out there and coaches that are really promoting the concept that, you know, we create our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you kind of wrap yourself around the fact situations happen that, you know, you had a part in creating it and trying to figure out, what did I do that may have created this? And also moving on into inner peace without, almost like I'd rather just skip over that part of it and just deal with it.
Right. You know what? And I think it can be a real, unfortunately, when we take on the, gosh, you know, we create our own reality, that belief is useful if it empowers us. And we create our own reality, I'm going to go create the next step now. If I'm using that question in the context we're hearing it here, we create our own reality, there's a little bit of blame going on here. Like, why did I do this? Why would I possibly have wanted this? And bad me for, you know, contributing some consciousness to this effort. I don't get too hung up in the whole, oh, my gosh. I kind of find it a little bit more egotistical to kind of hold that, oh, I am creating the entire universe. You know what? I am part of that consciousness that is creating the whole universe. I can't take responsibility for that are really clearly outside my control. You know, layoffs that are happening and fires that happen in Australia and really, you know, crummy situations, people having horrible accidents and stuff. So don't take responsibility for that. Take responsibility, just like you said. It's the here and the now. It's like, how do I collect all my power and my peace now and respond to this situation? What is called forth in me? And not from an ego place. I know you're good at tapping into that place of inspiration. This also reminds me, just another totally big point I was hoping to throw in here somewhere, because everyone here listening to the call, I know, is passionate about personal growth. You wouldn't be on this call if you didn't have some inclination towards that. And this is the big trap. It's the paradox that everyone here has to confront. Personal growth is all about what? Growth, improving, becoming better. And to have peace, ultimately, we have to just embrace the here and the now as it is, perfectly imperfect. And so we've got to make peace with that paradox. We can accept ourselves, others, reality, our dreams exactly as they are today, and we can still keep taking one step forward to grow. Your question sparked that.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Looks like we've got a full dose of inner peace. I really want to just thank and acknowledge all of you that, first of all, been here on the call, taking this all in, that are really inviting more inner peace in your life. And thank you for submitting your questions. And with that, just one big virtual inner peace hug to all of you. Have a very peaceful evening.